Live Creative Now, episode 64.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full-color creative life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, writing, visual arts, music, whatever, or anything in between, no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. And it's how you change the world from teeny tiny small ways like making yourself happier, maybe making somebody else smile, to bigger ways, because when you change the world in a small way, that ripples out. My last episode, episode 63, was sort of a meditation on the transformation that happens during an immersive creative experience. Specifically, I was talking about my week at Jazz Camp West and the transformation that happened during that week. Today's episode, episode 64, is a listener question episode. One of the things that I love doing most with this podcast is answering specific listener questions. And in fact, in case you weren't already aware, there is actually a button on my site, which you can find at livecreativenow.com/questions. And you can also find it in the sidebar and the footer of just about every page. This button allows you to leave me a voice message with your question or your issue that you would like me to talk about on the podcast. And surprisingly enough, almost nobody ever takes advantage of this. I mean, seriously, I think in all the time I've had it up there, which has probably been at least a year, maybe three people have used that voicemail option at all. And I don't think anyone has ever actually left me a question for the podcast with it. So I guess you guys are shy. But what that means is if you are brave enough to use it, it's pretty easy. You just click a button and you can start recording a message to me. Your chances of getting your question on the air are very high right now. So go to livecreativenow.com/questions before everyone else figures out that this voicemail option is available and, you know, becomes like crazy insane to try and get your question on the air. Anyway, thankfully, there are, in the meantime, also lots of other ways of getting me to answer your question on the show. You can always, of course, send me an email, livecreativenow.com/contact, or better yet, you can leave your question inside a review on iTunes. Hopefully it's a 5-star review. And if you want step-by-step instructions for how to do that, just go to livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review. livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review. For step-by-step instructions on how to leave your review on iTunes and leave your question inside your review. One tip about that, if you do leave a review with a question inside of it and you are outside of the United States, make sure to ping me elsewhere via email or Twitter or some way so that I know you've left a review, because I don't automatically see reviews that people in other countries leave. So just a weird thing about iTunes, you have to actually navigate into a separate place for each different country in order to see the reviews from that country. So anyway, whatever. I hope you do leave a review with a question in it. And I have gotten some really great listener questions recently, and I'm super excited that to sink my teeth into them. Today, I am answering a question that another Melissa sent me last week, which resonated with me so much that it just popped to the top of the queue. So let's get to it. Melissa writes, "Hi, Melissa. I've been listening to your podcasts. Love your insight and your doodles and things so much." Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate that. She writes, "I'm having a dilemma. I had a digital stamp shop for card making for 5 years. I sold my black and white line art for people to color. It was an accidental success. It had started as a doubtful hobby and snowballed. That was good and bad. I had seen what others were doing and wanted to try it, but after time, the passion was gone, and I kept going with the art because I needed the income, and I felt guilty about the idea of quitting. I also felt like I was obligated to a certain style and had no room for growth, and that I was not connected to what I was doing anymore. I let those feelings go on for way too long. I finally had to quit for my sanity, but it was a shock to my fans and customers when I announced closing it all, and in ways it felt like it could have ended better." A little interjection here. I just want to say, Melissa, be gentle with yourself there. Sure, maybe it could have ended better, but you know what? You're human. It's cool. It's okay. Just move forward. Okay, continuing with Melissa's note, she writes, "Long story short, I felt a bitterness, like I don't even want to use my shop name anymore, even though it's how everyone knows me, hiding from the world and my old art. It has taken me more than a year to truly regain my artistic passion, but it's still shaky at best. And I try to quietly show my new drawings on my Facebook profile, since praise really helps, but a good number of my friends were old customers, so I often hear them sadly say how they wish they could still buy my art, that they need what I'm drawing. They colored it before when I had my shop, and my art has evolved since then, but I still draw in a way that's very conducive to coloring. I have to work really hard to not become obsessed with making money again. I have a very strong entrepreneurial vein in me, much like my dad had, and every idea I have, my mind thinks I have to make money from it. As much as I don't want money to be my focus like it was before, I know I have fans and a lot of potential. I don't know what to do. It's eating me up. I want to use my art for something, but how? I would love some help or outsider insight. Thank you so much in advance. Love, a fellow Melissa." Oh my goodness, Melissa, I so relate. And I know that lots of other people do too. I know not everybody listening to this podcast does their creative thing for money. You certainly do not have to do creative things for money at all. I'm a big proponent of doing creative things for the purpose of just doing creative things. But that money piece, I know a lot of people experience it as well. It is a classic artist's dilemma. As creators, we have an absolute need to explore and grow. But if we grow an audience with whatever it is that we're creating, they want more of the same because that's how people are. They see something, they like it, they want more of it, right? And if that's all that we produce, then we stagnate and ultimately we burn out. And if you add money to the equation, especially if art is how you really pay your bills, as was the case for me with my calligraphy and ketubah business for many years, then it becomes a much harder trap to escape from. So, first, I want to simply acknowledge, Melissa, that your feelings are normal. You are not alone. You mentioned passion, losing your passion. And you know, passion, by its very nature, tends not to burn at the same intensity forever. You change, and what at first intrigued you and challenged you eventually can become boring, to put it bluntly. And also, you are absolutely not the only person to feel guilty about quitting. When we see people who appreciate us for something, then you know, it can feel like a betrayal when we let that thing go. Even just stepping back from something that you've worked hard to master, that can feel like a betrayal. myself as a calligrapher who spent years honing my skills in the attempt to master the craft of calligraphy, when I started creating artworks with no words on them, it felt like this weird sort of defection, like I was unfaithful somehow, like I was doing something bad. I mean, you know, how could I just toss out all those years of practice and study, right? But here's something really interesting. And I share this story because I hope it's a good example of how this feeling of guilt is a false feeling, because I had almost the exact same struggle when I cut my hair. Sounds ridiculous, but all my life, I had long hair. And because I'm a redhead, you guys probably all know me as a short-haired person, but well into my 30s, late 30s, I had long hair. And because I'm a redhead, I got a lot of comments about my hair from childhood, almost on a daily basis. Somebody would make some comment about my hair. Oh, it's so beautiful, blah, 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 whatever. And because of that, being a redhead is a really big part of my identity. But eventually, I got tired of having long hair. It wasn't actually the most flattering style for me because my hair is not super thick or wavy. And so it mostly looked kind of stringy, except for a few minutes right after brushing it. And it was kind of a pain to take care of. And, you know, I'd have to comb out the tangles when I took a shower and it would take forever to dry. And mostly, honestly, I would just put it in a ponytail. So boring. Now I have to admit, sometimes I miss having long hair because I can't do an updo or, you know, really cool, interesting things with my long hair because I don't have it anymore. But in reality, when I did have long hair, I never did anything with it. So, but when I thought about cutting it long years before I ever did, I felt this weird sense of false guilt. I know this sounds so weird, but I felt like I would be like, redheads should have long hair. Like I would be depriving all the people who had ever complimented me on my hair. I'd be depriving them of something important. I mean, so utterly ridiculous. But I remember there was a girl in my high school who she was a year or two ahead of me. And I remember she was a redhead as well. And at some point she cut her hair and I was horrified. How could a redhead cut her hair? I don't know. You guys probably all think I'm insane now, but this is reality. What was going on in my head? But here's the reality. Here's the truth. I didn't owe anyone my long hair. Cutting my hair short, other people might have preferred it longer, but I wasn't harming anybody. I was not actually culpable of wrongdoing. This is why I call that feeling false guilt. And this, Melissa, is what you are experiencing. True guilt is a very helpful feeling when you're actually culpable of an actual wrongdoing. But not providing people something that is not your responsibility to provide, that is not wrongdoing. I do not owe anybody long hair. I do not owe anybody calligraphy on every piece of artwork I create. And you do not owe anyone the black and white line art that they want you to create for them. You don't owe it to them. Unless you have an actual contract with somebody, unless somebody has paid you to create in a particular style and you've agreed to it, or you have an agreement with somebody that you would be breaking, you are not obligated to create in any style or even to create at all for any other people. Your only true obligation as an artist is to yourself. I'm going to say that again because it is really, really important. And it doesn't matter what kind of artist you are, any kind of creator, your only true obligation as an artist is to yourself. And that obligation is huge. You absolutely must feed your need to create in the ways that excite you and intrigue you. If you don't feed that need to create in the ways that excite and fulfill you and intrigue you, it will result, guaranteed, in the kind of burnout that both you and I have experienced, Melissa. Bitterness, hiding, complete stuckness. That will be the result if you do not feed your need to create in the ways that excite and intrigue you. So there's that. But what if you still need to make money from your creativity? Or what if you just want to make money from your creativity? How do you balance the kind of creation that you need to do that will be popular and that will bring in money, which leads to burnout if that's all you do? How do you balance that with the creating that you really want to do, which pushes in and grows you as an artist? And here is what I feel about this really, really strongly. Whatever kind of art you do, visual art, writing, music, macaroni sculptures, whatever it is, whether it's for money or not, you absolutely must carve out and maintain space to create purely for you. Purely for you. You must carve out and maintain sacred time to explore, to make messes, to follow your curiosity, to create purely for the joy of it, where nobody else's opinions matter one whit. This is what I call creative sandbox time. This is what I call creating in the creative sandbox. I've done a couple of episodes specifically all about this. Episode 5 is all about my creative sandbox rules, my creative sandbox manifesto, and also episode 41, which is a live version where I delivered a keynote address, essentially, about my creative sandbox manifesto and the 10 rules of the creative sandbox manifesto. The upshot is time in the creative sandbox is essential. Now, I used to think that the reason that I got burned out on my art business was because it was a business, because money got involved and money tainted my relationship to my art. I am no longer sure that that is entirely true. Money can very easily taint your relationship to your art. If you're not very, very careful, it will taint your relationship to your art. But I don't know that it has to. If you have a few very important things in place, two things that absolutely must be in place in order to prevent money from destroying your relationship to your art. First, you must set things up very intentionally so that you don't have to do things that suck the life out of you. Now, for example, if you know that you can't stand other people telling you what to do, then taking on commissions in which you give up creative control to somebody else, that's not going to work very well for you. So you probably are going to want to make it clear up front that you don't accept commissions. Or maybe you do accept commissions, but only if they're not art directed in any way, if you have 100% creative control. Maybe the client pays you to create a unique piece in your own unique style, but they have no say in how the end result is going to look beyond, you know, whatever parameters you establish in advance, maybe dimensions, color, palette, theme, maybe the medium, something like that. But the point is that you get to decide, and you have to establish that very, very clearly with any potential customers or clients. You get to determine what you will and will not do. It is your business. It is your business, not theirs. And if you decide at any point that a particular thing isn't working for you, stop offering it, period. If you no longer want to work in a particular style, take all the pieces in that style out of your portfolio and get them off of your website. Because if people see, whatever people see, that's what they're going to want more of. So if you don't want to do more of that, take it out. Don't offer it anymore. And I know this is exactly what's going on with you, Melissa, because that's what you talked about. So you do not owe your past customers more of the same. So your impulse to make completely different art and to stop even showing the old stuff and to get rid of that old business name, I completely understand that. You need to separate yourself from it in order to establish your new direction. That's really, really important. And you get to do that. Now, you know, my goal here with this podcast is not to be about business. That's not my secret sauce. That's not my specialty. I get people creating. However, I do want to say that as a business person, you know, just because you make something that you want to make doesn't mean that it's going to sell. And if you do want to sell things, then you are going to have to find what people want to buy in that region of the things that you love to make, right? So there has to be an overlap between what you love to create and what people are actually willing to pay money for. So, you know, this is a business decision, right? If making money is the ultimate goal, then you might decide that you're willing to do certain things, certain styles or whatever that you're not super excited about because then you know they bring in money. However, if you do decide that, whether or not you decide to do that, the second thing that absolutely must be in place to prevent money from destroying your relationship with your art is that you must make time to play just for you regularly. You must play in the creative sandbox regularly, ideally daily, even if it's only for tiny bits and snatches. Now, you know, your mileage may vary. It may work for you to do it, you know, two or three times a week. That may be fine. I find it so, so helpful to think tiny and daily, which is rule number four of my creative sandbox manifesto. I really need a little bit of creative sandbox playtime every day, even if it's just 10 minutes. It makes a huge difference in my life. Regardless of what regular creative sandbox play, what that schedule looks like for you, if you don't create that space and time that's just for you, you will burn out. Guaranteed. Now, I am convinced that if I had figured this out 20 years ago, both parts here, both setting things up really intentionally so that I wasn't doing the things that were sucking the life out of me, and so important, making time to play purely for me. If I had figured that out 20 years ago, I am convinced that I would not have burned out so badly on my art business. Now, I may still have decided to move on. And in fact, I am quite sure that I would have decided to move on because I changed. The things that excited me 20 years ago didn't excite me, you know, 10, 15 years later. But I might have spared myself, oh my God, so much pain and misery. Here is the thing about creative sandbox time. Whatever you create in the creative sandbox has to be purely for you. It has to be purely for the joy of it. However, this is a little, might be hard to wrap your head around, but that doesn't mean that you can't also offer it for sale, whatever you create in that creative sandbox time. But this can get a lot tricky, actually, because your mindset is critical. If you come at the work thinking about what's going to sell, what's going to sell, what's going to sell, what can I make that's going to sell? It has to be good. It has to be sellable. That will ruin it. Practically guaranteed. But that's not to say that you can't also make things that you know you want to sell. Totally go for it. Knock yourself out. But not during creative sandbox time. When you're in the creative sandbox, you cannot let money enter the equation. It has to be for you, period. Now, in truth, I share things that I create in the Creative Sandbox all the time, and I sell things that I create in the Creative Sandbox all the time. But while I'm creating, while I am in the sandbox doing my creating, I have to keep my focus, my attention on doing it for me. This is, as it says in my Creative Sandbox Manifesto, rule number 2, think process, not product. After I've created something, then I can look at it as a product, as a finished thing, whatever, and then I can share it, I can even offer it for sale, whatever. But if these thoughts start entering, thoughts of, oh my gosh, I have to impress other people, oh my gosh, this has to sell, other people have to like it and want to buy it, whatever. If those thoughts start entering my mind while I'm creating in the Creative Sandbox, then, and they do enter my mind, then I do my best to let those thoughts go and redirect my focus to the process. Come back to the process, come back to play and exploration and discovery and making messes and letting it be crappy. Now, a little side note here, you might be saying, wait a minute, Melissa, but you share works in progress all the time. They're not finished pieces. And you made them in the Creative Sandbox, and yet you're sharing them, and you know people are liking them and whatever. I thought you said that just now that you have to wait until after you're finished creating in the Creative Sandbox before you share your stuff. Isn't that a contradiction? And it is a bit of a contradiction. I do share my Creative Sandbox creations, my just for me creations in process all the time on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. But this is a very advanced technique, as it were. As I like to say, sort of borrowing from the Star Wars universe, Creative Sandbox energy is strong in me now, after many years of practice. So I'm pretty good at kicking out the gremlins, the this better be good gremlin, and the this better bring in money gremlin. I'm pretty good at kicking them out and bringing my focus back to playing just for me, back to making messes, back to there is no wrong, back to let it be crap. I'm pretty good at that. Even when I know I want to share something or offer it for sale, I have developed and honed the ability to come back to that Creative Sandbox mind space. Now, as they say in those car commercials with the cars that are driving super fast on curvy roads, do not try this at home. It's not that you shouldn't do that, but I want you to give yourself the space and freedom to truly create for your eyes only first. And then once that Creative Sandbox energy is strong in you, once you are able to send those, your gremlins, this better be good gremlin and this better bring in money gremlin and all the other gremlins, once you're good at sending them off to get pedicures, knock yourself out and share whatever you're doing in the Creative Sandbox. But you need to get really good at noticing when the sharing is going to clamp you down and tighten you up and block you, and when you can handle it. Hopefully that makes sense. Now, here is a tip. What I was talking about, that redirection of thoughts, I'm working in the Creative Sandbox. I start to notice that, oh my God, this better be good gremlin voice going crazy, or this, oh, you got to make money off of this gremlin going or whatever. I notice that, and I redirect my thoughts to, I send those gremlins off to get pedicures, and I redirect my thoughts to, this is play. This is just for me. This is my time to just to let myself make crap. That redirecting of thoughts is exactly the same process that I practice in meditation, that anyone practices in meditation. When I meditate, my goal is to be in the present moment. That is my goal, with my attention on my breath. But guess what? Minds are made to think. So inevitably, Within seconds, usually, my mind will start wandering into the past, into the future, into, you know, some idea for something. It just goes bounding down a thought trail. This is not a problem. If you thought that meditation was all about clearing your mind of thought, it's not about that at all. Your mind is going to think. It's made to think. So when your mind goes bounding down a thought trail, that is not a problem. As my meditation mentor, online mentor, Susan Piver says, on a scale of 0 to 10, or 1 to 10, with 10 being a horrible problem and 1 being no problem at all, your mind bounding down a thought trail while you're meditating is a 0. It is totally not a problem. And in fact, noticing that my mind has bounded off down a thought trail, that is the golden moment in meditation. That moment is the encapsulation of mindfulness, the awareness of what's happening right now in present time. Oh, there goes my thought. There goes my mind down a thought trail, right? And it is the ultimate goal, that awareness, that mindfulness, that noticing is the ultimate goal of meditation, not a thought-free mind. Because if I can notice that my thoughts have carried me away from present time, then I have a choice. I can choose to stay on that thought train and follow it where it's going to go, or I can choose to simply let go of whatever my mind was thinking and come back to my breath gently, with self-compassion, lovingly. I get to take a fresh start, as Susan Piper says. That is the practice. That is the practice of meditation. It's not clearing your mind. It's noticing when your attention is straying and gently bringing it back with love. And it is the same with focusing on the process, focusing on the joy of creating for you in the creative sandbox. Other thoughts will come in. Your editor is going to go crazy. Your gremlins are going to go nuts. You're going to have those voices that say things like, oh my God, this sucks. And you're never going to be as good as so-and-so. You're never going to be as good as you want, blah, 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 blah. Those voices are going to pop in. And if money is an issue in what you create, money thoughts are going to pop in. How can I make this sellable is going to be a natural thought that naturally just intrudes. Is this going to sell? That thought is going to pop in. Or just, is anybody going to like this? Do I even like it? Those thoughts will come in, and that is not a problem in the least. It's a 0. It's a 0 of a problem. As long as you remember that you are not your thoughts. And as long as you notice your thoughts and come back to Creative Sandbox Manifesto rule number 2, think process, not product. As long as you notice your thoughts and come back to creating for you. When you are inside the Creative Sandbox, and remember, ideally you're making time for that every single day. When you're inside the Creative Sandbox, your fans are irrelevant. Your family is irrelevant. Your friends are irrelevant. Everybody is irrelevant except for you. The Creative Sandbox must be your private bubble. And here's the really ironic thing, or maybe it's Zen. I don't know enough about Zen to know if it actually is. But the more you're able to shut the rest of the world out when you're in the Creative Sandbox, the more you're able to let yourself be totally free to make crap, the more authentic and the more you, your work will be, the richer, more creative it will be as well. And this is the really wild thing, the more your true right people will resonate with it. And in fact, you might even find yourself with more and more, more and more loyal raving fans when you create your art without your fans in mind. I know that sounds really strange, or it may sound really strange. Maybe it doesn't sound strange to you. It was hard for me to wrap my head around, but so much of the art that I have created, whatever, and by that I mean, you know, visual art, writing, music, whatever, so much of what I have created for me, completely just not even caring what people think about it, or at least continually bringing my attention back to trying to not care about it, really freeing myself up, the more people have really liked it. And of course, there will be people who don't like your stuff. There will be people who don't resonate with your new stuff. But guess what? They are not your responsibility. They're not your true fans, and they are not your responsibility. So, Melissa, my prescription for you is to go get creating in the creative sandbox for you. Practice this. It is a practice. It is a practice. And you will find that you get better at it the more you do it. And the better that you get at giving yourself creative sandbox playtime, the more your world will open up. Oh my God, my world is so much more colorful and open and mind-blowingly amazing the more I let myself make crap and the more I just don't give a flip about what other people think. And I am somebody who gives lots of flips. That's like my native way of being, is to care way too much what other people think. But I have been practicing very intensely for years now. I've really been working on this, practicing this, exactly what I was just sharing. And it has made all the difference in the world. And the work that I'm creating now, it surprises and intrigues me. It's stuff that I never, ever thought I would have been creating. I look at it sometimes with like, that came out of me? What? Where the heck did that come from? But, and it's an amazing feeling to just be able to let yourself play. That's really what it comes down to. Let yourself play. If you can do that, if you can practice this, practice it and get better at it, then before you know it, you will be living that vibrant, full color life that you have been longing for. So let me know how it goes, Melissa. I really hope this has been helpful. That's it. That's a wrap. If you would like a deep dive into the creative sandbox to practice some creative sandbox skills and immerse yourself in creative play for 5 days, join me August 17th through 21st at my 4th annual Create and Incubate Retreat in the hills of Los Gatos, California, above Silicon Valley. It is 5 days of uninterrupted create time, facilitated by the chief instigator and gremlin whisperer extraordinaire, yours truly, me, myself, and I. I'd love to have you. It is the most fun you can have with your clothes on. 5 days and 4 nights to fuel your well for months. If you'd like to recharge your commitment to your creative spirit and fill your tank with a reserve of energy to propel you through the year, and you'd like to do it in a cozy, beautiful setting with support and guidance and just the right amount of structure from someone you trust, I would love for you to join me. Just go to createandincubateretreat.com. That's createandincubateretreat.com. I would love to have you there. That's it. Until next time, thanks again for joining me, and go get creating.
Live creative now. Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.